to the day is United States against Wright. Mr. Fischella.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Tim Fischella, and I represent Mr. Wright in this matter. On appeal, we've raised two issues for review for this court, the first being whether the district court erred in admitting out-of-court statements by a confidential informant who did not testify at trial. The second issue we've raised is whether Mr. Wright was entitled to a missing witness instruction when the same witness, confidential informant, did not testify at trial. As to the first issue, the point of error raised by Mr. Wright revolves around a recorded conversation between himself and the confidential informant, which occurred on February 26th of 2010. Only Mr. Wright and the confidential informant are present in the vehicle when this recording is made. These statements, the way they were used by the government, and the prospective curtailment of cross-examination if the confidential informant were called to testify, violated Wright's right to confrontation. These statements were testimonial in nature.
Starting with the Constitution rather than with the hearsay rule.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Why are you starting with the Constitution rather than the hearsay rule? I can understand a confrontation clause objection, as in the last case where the hearsay rule plainly allowed the testimony, and Rule 703 allowed the testimony in the last case. But why start with the confrontation clause when the objection is to hearsay? There's a rule against hearsay. I mean, we keep saying we don't reach constitutional issues unnecessarily. So why is this not just a hearsay objection?
Your Honor, at the district court level, we had objected on hearsay and confrontation.
So why are you not arguing hearsay here?
Here, Your Honor, there's a couple reasons. First of all, we felt to focus the argument more specifically on what we felt was the more pertinent issue. There is some case law in the Seventh Circuit and other districts that seem to suggest that other factors outside of what's specifically in the statement may impact whether there's a confrontational issue. And some of those issues were present in this case. So
are you saying that you now have come to believe that your hearsay objection was improper and that the hearsay rule allows this evidence in?
No,
Your Honor. That you're contending that the hearsay rules in the rules of evidence are unconstitutional?
No, Your Honor, that's enough.
So why aren't you just making a hearsay objection?
And, Judge, we don't specifically argue for hearsay, though we do argue in our brief that the statements were not only contextual, that they were, in fact, offered for the truth of the matter asserted, but we do couch our general argument as a confrontational argument. The statements in this case...
I think you are trying to make a confrontation clause argument rather than a confrontational argument.
Yes, Your Honor, confrontation clause. And the statements were testimonial in nature.
I've got another question about, maybe this is about litigation strategy, too. Are you contending, did you argue in the district court, or are you contending here, that the district judge's instructions to the jury about how to use the informant's testimony were inadequate or improper?
Judge, I believe the jury was properly instructed. The court did.
The jury was instructed. The question is whether you concede that the instruction is proper.
Yes, Judge, I believe the instruction given.
Well, I've looked at the instruction. It's hopelessly vague. It would not tell a reasonable jury what to do with this evidence. It says the evidence was admitted for context. Now, you're a juror. What in the world does that mean? Right? One of the critical steps in handling a jury is to make the instructions concrete, to tell it what proper use this has and what improper use. But if they're satisfactory to the defense, there we are.
And, Judge, I do think that's an issue that comes into a play when reviewing.
What does it mean? Extension of Judge Easterbrook's question, for context. What is that supposed to
mean? Doesn't mean anything.
Judge, and I can't recall specifically. I believe the instruction that was initially proposed and read to the jury was based on a pattern instruction that said the...
Yes, I know, but if it said for context, what does that mean? What is a jury supposed to understand?
Well, and I believe it would be difficult. I agree with the court. That would be difficult for the jury to parse out.
So why did you say the instruction was adequate?
Well, Judge, in terms of the, it is a pattern. I believe it was a pattern.
Well, you don't think you can challenge a pattern instruction? You think they're sacrosanct? You've never challenged a pattern instruction?
No, Your Honor. I personally have not. And perhaps that's an argument we could have made. I would suggest that that argument is certainly something that comes into a play in relation to the totality of whether there is a confrontation clause issue here, meaning the jury was certainly instructed you're only supposed to use these statements to prove context or to show what Mr. Wright's statements were in response to them. However, they were testimonial in nature. Backing up a little bit, the confidential informant knew these statements were recorded. Any reasonable person would have anticipated that they were be used in a prosecution against Mr. Wright. Confidential informant was never called. He was never cross-examined at a prior hearing. During this February 26 conversation, the confidential informant begins the discussion with Mr. Wright about his drug supply or what the government alleged was his drug supply by saying, you guessed you wouldn't hear who called me about the stuff recently. The informant then says to Mr. Wright, you stocked. He then prods him again, you stocked up again. Here, the CI is making statements that while there was that instruction to the jury, accused Wright not only of possessing drugs with an intent to distribute them at the time of the conversation, but also suggested that he had done so in the past. The statements about being stocked were also adopted by the government in its opening statement. In other words, the statements were offered for more than contextual purposes. Here, the government attempted to shift its burden of producing this witness by informing the district court that the witness could be called if the defendant wished to call him. And, again, we would suggest that that proposal does not cure confrontation clause concerns because it shifts a burden on the defendant and, I would say, confuses the issue with the compulsory process or other state court subpoena power. In short, these statements were offered not merely to provide context, but as a way of offering substantive evidence against Wright that the government, without the government assuming the risk of calling this confidential informant to testify. The second issue we've raised on appeal is somewhat of a related issue. It's whether the missing witness instruction would have been appropriate in this case. We recognize that generally this circuit has found or has discussed disfavoring this instruction. However, this court has recognized that it may be appropriate where the witness would be able to provide relevant.
So you thought this confidential informant, if he testified, would provide evidence helpful to you?
Well, Your Honor, I would say that he would definitely provide relevant non-cumulative evidence. I cannot.
No, but you're only interested in evidence favorable to your client, surely.
And, Your Honor, I do think that some of the evidence that would have come out from the confidential informant.
So why didn't you call him as a witness?
Well, Judge, there's a couple reasons for that. We had said that we did not want the confidential informant to come in. That statement was made as the government was producing its case in chief. We took the position that the confidential informant was the only individual in the car with Mr. Wright during this March 3rd transaction. The government was not going to be able to call any witnesses that could say what happened in that vehicle on that day. There was no audio. There was no.
Did you want him to testify or not, or want him not to testify?
At that stage in the trial, we did not want him to testify. Well, Judge, I shouldn't say we did not want him to.
Well,
but
what's your current view? You want him to testify or not want him to testify?
We did
what
not.
What are you talking about? I don't understand you.
Judge, the distinction is.
What are you complaining about? If you didn't want him to testify, well, he didn't testify, so you're happy. So what do you want?
Well, Judge, I would suggest that that's not necessarily the standard that's been adopted by the court. And the onus, it's somewhat related to the Melendez-Diaz, though I realize we're talking about different issues.
So you want his out-of-court statements suppressed, is that right?
We did, Judge, yes.
And yet you think that he had would offer testimony helpful to you, don't you? Isn't that your view?
Well, Judge, I think if he came in to testify, if his out-of-court statements were not going to be allowed, unless you were coming to testify, then we would have wanted him, in fact, to come in and testify. So I think there's a distinction there.
I'm lost. Do you want him or not want him to testify?
Judge, at the time of the initial, when the trial began, we wanted him to come in and testify. As the testimony developed, we did not want him to testify because we believed that there were problems with the government proving its case based on him not being there. However, despite the fact that we didn't want him to testify, we still think that the missing witness instruction was appropriate.
Then I'm lost.
Yeah, because you don't get missing witness instruction unless it's somebody you wanted, and then he's peculiarly in the government's control. And that wasn't the situation here. You could have subpoenaed him. The government would have produced him. You just don't get missing witness just to say you want missing witness and you want an adverse instruction because he didn't show up.
And Your Honor, I think there's a...
He wasn't pragmatically unavailable.
Well, I do think he was pragmatically unavailable. The government, he had been arrested for a drug charge himself.
The government said they were going to produce it if you asked.
Yeah, that's all you had to do. You issue a subpoena.
Do you think they were lying? They said if you ask, we'll produce him.
Yeah.
And if he comes and he takes five, you do a pretrial, you just bring him in, he can indicate if he's lawyered up, he's not going to say anything, he's going to take five, then you go from there. But the government said they would bring him in, so you could have subpoenaed him. You didn't even have to take the government at its word that they would produce him.
In Your Honor, I have had no doubt at the time of trial that the government would have produced him. Mm-hmm. What we argued
was available.
So that's why you can't get missing witness, see?
Yeah.
That's why you can't get him, because you have to say, I want the witness to testify. I can't get him because he's in the control of the government. He's unavailable. So that's usually what missing witness is given for. Or the person is dead, or they have horrible health, or something.
In Your Honor, in sum, I see my time is up, but our position was that the witness was pragmatically unavailable to us because of his closely intertwined relationship with the government, that he refused several requests for us to interview him prior to trial, and other circumstances.
Thank you, Mr. Fischella.
Thank you.
Ms. Greenwald.
Good morning, Your Honors. Dealing first with the Confrontation Clause issue, I just to respond to some of the things counsel said, this was not a case where the statement was offered for the truth of the matter asserted therein. It was not hearsay, and we quote pretty much the bulk of the conversation.
It depends on what the jury was told. Does the jury end up believing that it should accept something the informant said because the informant said it, or because it helps them to understand what the defendant said? The latter is an admission. That drives us to the instructions. Now, Mr. Fischella says he's perfectly happy with the instructions. But should we be happy with an instruction that just tells the jury, you should use the declarant, you should use the informant statement for context?
That's not all the instruction says, Your Honor, and this Court has been happy with it on many occasions. What the instruction says, and at page 25 of our brief, and obviously in the record at page 365, the confidential informant statements are offered only to prove context for the defendant's statements and are not to be considered for the truth of the matters asserted therein. And this Court has repeatedly approved the use of that instruction in the context of cases identical to this one.
What does it mean, for context?
Well, I think the way the context of that statement, I think, comes out both in the context of the statement itself and in the context of how it's used by the parties.
Now you have totally...
Well, I don't mean to. I don't think you can look at this. I don't think if the court wants to take issue with this instruction, I would argue that this isn't the case to do it. Because if you look...
There have been no objections, so it's obviously not this case.
Clearly,
I looked to see what the 2012 Pattern Jury Instruction Committee did, and I didn't find this instruction in the 2012 Pattern Instructions. Now, maybe it was there, and I couldn't track it down.
My understanding is this is a pattern instruction, but I don't have the instructions with me. If I'm mistaken...
We superseded all the old pattern instructions. What was done at this trial, if it was based on the old pattern, it's been replaced by a completely new set of pattern jury instructions.
Yes.
That's what I was looking at to see if this particular instruction had been repeated, and I couldn't find it. Now, it may be there. My search algorithm may not have caught it correctly. But we, you know, since we are updating our pattern jury instructions, maybe we need to say a bit about this particularly.
I understand. I mean, in this particular case, the defense, I believe, agreed to this instruction. So, again, that's not something I focused on in the record. But at the very least, they didn't object to it. Of that, I'm sure. But I also think in the context of this case...
Michelle said on his feet he thought it was fine.
Right. No, I understand. And obviously, it wasn't raised in his brief. It's been waived. But I would just direct the court again, though, to the actual statement that came into this case, because this isn't a matter of the defendant, I mean, of the CI saying to the defendant, you're stalked, right? Yeah, I'm stalked. And then it's done. What happens is, in the course of their conversation, the CI says, a guy called me, and the defendant responds, everybody's been calling me. In which response to that, the CI says, because he's been saying he's been getting a lot of calls, you stalk, and he cut him off and said, I've had 62 messages. To which the CI says, you stalked up then. Yeah, I've been stalked up, says the defendant. Cool. I did that before I left, said the defendant. Sweet, you got a lot? Yeah, says the defendant. So we should be okay. Yeah. I try to stay 2 or 3 weeks ahead. In other words, this isn't a case where it's really confusing about what the truth of the matter stated therein by the CI is. The CI is just asking questions. It's the defendant who's providing the answers. So, and the government, in its arguments to the jury and in its opening statement to the jury, makes that pretty clear, the context of the defendant's comments. So that's what I mean by saying...
No, I mean, that's fine, but you could easily tell the jury that they're only to consider what the defendant said. But on the other hand, he was speaking in answer to questions, so you'll have to hear the questions also. But that's not what you're to focus on. You focus on the answer. You say that. Right?
Well, I think that
differently. The problem with the instruction is that it's generic, and the jury really needs to be made concrete for a particular case to tell the jury what it can consider and what it can't.
And why?
Yeah.
At this stage, and I guess all I'm trying to say, and I hear that you're in agreement that in this case it's not an issue, but I hear what you're saying prospectively in the future.
Right. So it makes sense. You agree that it makes sense to be more direct with the jury so they actually get it.
I think it depends on the case. I mean, I don't mean
I'm just saying generally, though. You think it depends on the case, whether the jury comprehends what the instruction is. I don't think you really mean that. It is better, the clearer the instruction, the more simple.
As a general proposition, of course. Yeah. I guess what I'm taking issue with is I'm not so sure that instruction in the context of a case is unclear.
No, this is. Because what we're talking about is saying something like, this statement is being... The statement of the CI is being offered so you can understand the conversation that he had with the defendant.
Yes.
What the CI says is not offered for the truth of what the CI said, but only to help you understand what the defendant responded or something to
and
that effect.
And that obviously is something that probably went on in conversations about the new instructions, perhaps. But all I'm saying is I'm not sure what appears is that different.
Well, you have to agree it's different because it doesn't break it down enough for them.
The confidential statements are offered to prove the context for the defendant's statements.
What is context in this? Context could be the whole trial, right? But that's not the relevant context. The relevant context is he's answering questions. So you have to tell him in context, in this courtroom, in this legal system, in America. What a juror takes away from the state.
My only hesitation is I'm just not going to concede the inaccuracy of that.
You better concede it. It's a terrible instruction.
That's the court's opinion.
Actually, the introduction to the pattern instructions, both the current one and the former version, said these are just frameworks. They need to be made concrete for each trial. And what we see here, as in many other cases, is where they're not made concrete. Mm-hmm. They're just taken out of the pattern and given as written without the level of detail needed to make them useful to the jury. And we keep saying they need to be made concrete. Maybe we need to say it again. You obviously haven't gotten that message.
No, obviously. Well, in this, I mean, I guess I just keep looking at this one in the context of this case.
Yeah, well, we know that. We get that. We're just trying to advance
the
justice here, like in the context of justice.
I understand.
That's our only point. That's what we're driven by.
That I understand.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Fischella, we appreciate your willingness to take the appointment in this case and your assistance to your client. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will be in recess.